This morning we're going to conclude our winter series that we've been going through over the past couple of weeks. We're going to be looking at Daniel chapter 6. The day of May 19, 1780 is known to historians as New England's famous dark day. The skies across the northeast, for no explainable reason, were almost completely dark in the middle of the day. Candles were lighted in many homes. The birds were silent and disappeared. They retired to roost for the night, they thought. Many were terrified. They were convinced that the day of judgment was at hand. The Connecticut legislature was in session while this was happening. Members were panicked and made the motion to adjourn. The opinion of the venerable Colonel Abraham Davenport was asked. His answer was one grounded in calmness and strength. This is what he said. I am against an adjournment. The day of judgment is either approaching or it is not. If it is not, there is no cause for adjournment. If it is, I choose to be found doing my responsibility. I wish, therefore, that candles may be brought. The great men and women who have served God through the ages have all had this same mindset, this same attitude. Among their number was a young Jewish exile named Daniel. Daniel was one of the youths taken from Jerusalem to Babylon by King Nebuchadnezzar to be trained for service in the king's palace. He distinguished himself as a young man of character and ability, and he rose to positions of great power and influence under King Nebuchadnezzar. When the Babylonian Empire was overtaken by the Medo-Persian Empire, Daniel's brilliance and talent was recognized and rewarded by these kings as well. All of this brings us to the incident that we find in Daniel chapter 6. It seemed good to Darius, who was king at this time, to appoint 120 satraps over the kingdom, and they would be in charge of the whole kingdom, and over them three commissioners, of whom Daniel was one, that these satraps might be accountable to them, and that the king might not suffer loss. Then this Daniel began distinguishing himself among the commissioners and satraps because he possessed an extraordinary spirit. And the king planned to appoint him over the entire kingdom. Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful, and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him. Then these men said, "We will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God." Then these commissioners and satraps came by agreement to the king and spoke to him as follows, "King Darius, live forever. All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps, the high officials and the governors have consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days, shall be cast into the lion's den. Now, O king, establish the injunction and sign the document so that it may not be changed, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked." Therefore, King Darius signed the document, that is, the injunction. Now, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now, in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem. And he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and supplication before his God. Then they approached and spoke before the king about the king's injunction. "Did you not sign an injunction that any man who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days, is to be cast into the lion's den?" The king replied, "The statement is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which may not be revoked." Then they answered and spoke before the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, O king, or to the injunction which you signed, but keeps making his petition three times a day. Then, as soon as the king heard this statement, he was deeply distressed and set his mind on delivering Daniel. And even until sunset, he kept exerting himself to rescue him. Then these men came by agreement to the king and said to the king, "Recognize, O king, that it is a law of the Medes and Persians that no injunction or statute which the king establishes may be changed." Then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in and cast into the lion's den. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you." A stone was brought and laid over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet rings of his nobles, so that nothing would be changed in regard to Daniel. Then the king went off to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no entertainment was brought before him, and his sleep fled from him. Then the king arose at dawn at the break of day and went in haste to the lion's den. When he had come near the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. The king spoke and said to Daniel, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel spoke to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me, inasmuch as I was found innocent before him, and also toward you, O king. I have committed no crime." Then the king was very pleased and gave orders for Daniel to be taken up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatever was found on him, because he had trusted in God. Then the king gave orders, and they brought those men who had maliciously accused Daniel. And they cast them, their children, and their wives into the lion's den. And they had not reached the bottom of the den before the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then Darius, the king, wrote to all the peoples, nations, and men of every language who were living in all the land, "May your peace abound. I make a decree that in all the dominion of my kingdom, men are to fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and enduring forever. And his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed, and his dominion will be forever. He delivers and rescues and performs signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has also delivered Daniel from the power of the lions." So this Daniel enjoyed success in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. What a powerful chapter. What an amazing story. There are three specific scenes I want us to focus our attention on this morning. The first scene is this: the plotting of evil men. Some Christians are naive enough to believe they have no enemies. Yet Jesus constantly spoke of being aware of our enemies. He teaches us to watch out for our enemies. He teaches us how to treat our enemies. He even instructs us to pray for and to love our enemies. Daniel could relate to what Jesus said. Through no fault of his own, a pack of political bureaucrats marked Daniel as an enemy, and they were on a mission to destroy him. This foreigner was going to be in charge of their kingdom, and they did not want that to happen. The question we need to consider is why? Why were these men seeking to destroy Daniel? Another question that certainly fits within that is, why did people want to kill Jesus? Because if we know the answer to that question, it's actually going to show us why these men were seeking to destroy Daniel, because the answer is the same. Why did people want to destroy Jesus? After everything that he had done for the people, after all the healings that he had done, the great teachings that he was giving to them, and there were still a majority of the religious leaders who wanted him dead. Why? Jealousy. It was out of envy that they sought to kill Christ. And it's the same with Daniel. It was out of jealousy that caused all of these other men to rise up against him. Daniel was smart. He was talented. He was honest. He was hardworking. He was also a foreigner. And you put all of that together, And these men wanted him gone. They wanted to destroy him. He was so exceptional that he was about to be set over the entire kingdom. Everything that Daniel did, everything that he touched, it was blessed. And the king, he was a wise man. He saw that Daniel had risen above all of these other satraps, all of the other prefects. And so he was about to give him this position of honor. And while all this was going on, his enemies were seeking to bring him down. Now, what strategy would work? What would work to bring down Daniel? Now, before we answer that question, think about it in regards to your life. If people were trying to bring you down, if you were surrounded by people at work and they were on a mission, we want to destroy this person. We want to try to find something from his life or her life that we can use to bring him or her down. What strategy would work? What about Satan? If Satan was seeking to destroy you, if he was seeking to bring you down, if he was seeking to get you addicted to sin, caught up in its web, what would Satan use against you? Because not only are evil people out there conspiring against God and his people, we certainly know Satan always is. So what strategy would work against you? I believe these are some of the things these men tried to consider with Daniel. Appeal to his greed by getting him to take bribes and kickbacks. Ever been tempted in that area? Maybe they thought to themselves, we will appeal to his lust by getting him involved in a sex scandal. That's certainly familiar to our day. Appeal to his envy by getting him to plot against the king. Who wants to be second in command when they can have the entire kingdom for themselves? Maybe they tried to appeal to his vices by getting him buried in alcohol or drugs. Perhaps an appeal to his laziness by getting him to quit working hard. And as Drew talked about, maybe they tried to appeal to his pride by getting him to believe his own press clippings. Look at how great I am. Look at how high I've risen. And I've done all of this on my own. But none of that worked. None of those things worked against Daniel. If we were honest with ourselves, I believe out of that list that I shared with you, there's something in that list that we struggle with. Something within that list that Satan is using, and maybe other people, to try to get us away from God, to try to compromise our beliefs and God's standards. But Daniel was bulletproof. And so finally the men, they reached this conclusion. We will not find any ground of accusation against this Daniel unless we find it against him with regard to the law of his God. Now I promise you, these men were digging. They were looking for anything, any reason, any weakness that they could use to attack Daniel. But they could find nothing. And so now they had to turn to his relationship with God. And they didn't have to watch him very long to figure out that Daniel's prayer life offered an opening they could attack. Now let's think about it in those terms. Can people look at our lives and tell that we're close to God? These men were able to look at Daniel when they started investigating, and the one conclusion they walked away from, he is close with God. He has a close, personal, intimate relationship with his God. Could people look at us and come to that conclusion? Paul encourages us in the New Testament to not grow weary in doing good. As I grow older, that's one of the biggest temptations I face. And Paul realized it. God realizes it as well. And so we have that encouragement. Don't grow weary while doing good. We will be attacked while we serve God. We will be attacked while doing good, just as Daniel was. There is always evil plotting against God. There is always evil plotting against His people. The second scene I want to bring to your attention is this scene, the prayers of an everyday believer. These politicians approached King Darius with one purpose. They had one mission, one goal. We want to bring Daniel down. And so they go before the king and they throw all of this flattery at the king. And there was one purpose for everything that they said. They wanted to basically persuade the king to do what they wanted. They were setting a trap for Daniel that they thought was foolproof. They knew Daniel would pray to his God. After watching him, after examining his life, they knew without a doubt that he was going to keep praying. And due to the unchanging nature of the Medo-Persian law, there would be no changing it, no escape. Have you thought about this question before? What should Christianity look like on a day-to-day basis? We're entering a new year. It begins today. What should our life look like in 2017 as Christians? Well, there are certain things that should be a part of our lives every day. There are qualities that we should show to the world every day. There are things that we should be involved in every day. And these things aren't new to you. This isn't rocket science. We know we should study God's Word every day. In the bulletin each week, you'll find some verses that we're encouraging the congregation to read through. We should study God's Word. We should meditate on His Word. We should look for opportunities to serve Him. I've mentioned January 29th several times. Opportunity to sign up to serve God in a meaningful way within His kingdom. But one other thing that should always be a part of that list is prayer. I don't believe we understand what we have in prayer. It is impossible to be close to God without talking to Him. It is impossible to continually resist temptation without prayer. It is impossible to gain the strength necessary to withstand trials without prayer. As I look forward to 2017 and I think about this new year, anytime we do that, it's usually great things that we're looking towards. Great opportunities, great moments, great vacations that we planned. We think about the exciting things that await us in 2017. There's also going to be trials. There's going to be struggles. Every day of our life, in some way, we face trials. And in 2017, we may encounter some big trials in our lives. There's no way we will stand in the face of those trials without prayer. It is impossible to mold our will into the will of the Father without prayer. In Matthew chapter 6, Jesus, He's talking about prayer. How to pray. When you pray, it's not if you pray. If you're a Christian, if you're close to God, you're going to be praying when you pray. You're not to be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and on the street corners so that they may be seen by men. Truly I say to you, they have their reward in full. But you, when you pray, go into your inner room, close your door, and pray to your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you are praying, do not use meaningless repetitions as the Gentiles do, for they suppose that they will be heard for their many words. So do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask Him. Jesus knew we would struggle with prayer. Even within the Sermon on the Mount, as He's talking to people who are struggling with life, He encourages them to pray. When you pray, have this mindset, have this attitude. He goes on to say, pray then in this way. What a beautiful prayer He prays. Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be Your name. Holy is Your name. Your kingdom come. Your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day, just today, give us our daily bread. And forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. And do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For if you forgive others for their transgressions, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others, then your Father will not forgive your transgressions. You look at Jesus as he talks about prayer and he models prayer. It isn't difficult to see Daniel following such practices in his prayers to God. He doesn't make an over-the-top, ostentatious display of religion. He simply goes home and does what he's always done. He just went back to his chamber after the king signed that document, after he signed that injunction. Daniel just went back into his room and he did what he had done before. He prayed. When Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house and he continued kneeling on his knees 3 times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God. Now listen to this, as he had been doing previously. It didn't matter what that king put into law. It didn't matter what King Darius came up with, what the satraps came up with. It wasn't going to change what Daniel was going to do. Whether the king was going to reward people for praying to Jehovah God or say they were going to be thrown into the lion's den, Daniel was going to keep praying. He just simply talked to his Father. Every day, I go for a walk. If the weather's nice, I go to campus and I'll walk around campus for 30 to 45 minutes. If it's cold, I'll go to the Y and walk around their track for 30 to 45 minutes. If I don't have time to go to one of those places, I'll just walk circles here in the auditorium. And I just talk to God. And I've started doing that in the last year. And I have to tell you, it's my favorite part of the day. And I can't imagine going through a day now without doing that. And I look back on my life, how many days I didn't. How many days I would go without even talking to God. And I can't imagine living one day now without talking to my Father. I believe we need more heart-to-heart conversation with God. I strive to talk with God the way I talk with others. I certainly enter his presence with respect. But I've come to learn that God, my Father, he just wants to hear from me. I don't have to have a special prayer voice when I talk to him. I don't have to have special prayer words. I don't have to come up with a completely new language. He just wants me to talk to him, to converse, to open up my heart, to share my dreams, my goals, my struggles, my challenges, my worries, my life. What a blessing to do that. I can't imagine living one day without having that opportunity to talk to my Father. I'm sure you've heard many lessons on prayer. I think the best message we can get is seeing people of prayer, like Daniel. Daniel, he didn't have anything against the king. In fact, they seemed to get along. They seemed to be friends. But Daniel knew that God alone was worthy of prayer. And so he kept praying. I want you to listen to this about prayer. Prayer catapults us onto the frontier of spiritual life. Of all the spiritual disciplines, prayer is the most central because it ushers us into perpetual communion with the Father. Meditation introduces us to the inner life. Fasting is an accompanying means. Study transforms our minds. But it is the discipline of prayer that brings us into the deepest and highest work of the human spirit. Real prayer is life-creating and life-changing. Prayer, secret, fervent, believing prayer, lies at the root of all personal godliness. Jesus prayed. Daniel, he prayed. Do we? No wonder Daniel kept praying. When you read something like this, and if you've experienced this in your life, that communion with God, that intimacy with him, you'll never give it up. It doesn't matter what people threaten you with. When you encounter God and you're able to grow close to him, there's nothing that's going to keep you away. And then the final scene I want to show you is the protection of an everlasting father. When the jaded politicians run to the king to turn in the law-breaking Daniel, they lay it on thick. They say this about Daniel: "The Jew pays no attention to you, king." But Darius isn't buying it. He knows that Daniel is a good man, and he wishes that he could save him in some way. But he knows he is powerless to change the law that he's made. And he's sick to death about this. He can't even sleep that night. The king knew that he was helpless to save Daniel. But there was another king who wasn't helpless to save. And when you look at Daniel and what happened to him when he was thrown into that lion's den, Daniel wasn't saved because of his relationship with King Darius. There was nothing Darius could do for him. Daniel was saved because of his relationship with God. We devote so much time, so much energy, so much of ourselves to building up earthly relationships that will never save us. Maybe it's time for us to start spending a little more time with God, the one who can save. But we know this about Daniel. He was content no matter the outcome. And he had this contentment because he was close to God. Perhaps that's what's missing in many of our lives. Closeness to God changes everything. If you're bored this morning, that's a symptom of a bigger problem. It's more than just a bad preacher up here speaking. If you're bored with life, if you're struggling with temptation, continually giving into it, that's a symptom of a bigger problem. It's a symptom of a heart problem. Closeness to God will change everything. And I'm convinced that's what many Christians are missing. We know it's there. We know it's available to us. But it always just seems out of reach. Daniel had this mindset: if God saves me, great. But if he doesn't, so be it. I will serve the Lord regardless of the circumstance. If the Lord were to take me right now in this lion's den, I will be found doing my responsibility. Those were the words of Colonel Abraham Davenport on that day back in the 1700s. I choose to be found doing my responsibility. As we enter another new year, we have big dreams, big goals, new resolutions. Slow down enough each day to pray. At least do that. Slow down enough each day to just talk to your Father. Closeness to God will change everything for you. It won't change the physical struggles you have. It won't change your financial situation. I'm not talking about those things. But the things that really matter, closeness to God will change all of it. This morning, an opportunity to have your sins washed away, to be saved by the only King that can make that possible. If you need to be baptized into Christ, or if you need the prayers of your church family, we offer the invitation to you now as we stand and sing together.